you. Okay, text 60 on page 148. Sounds good together.
Yatato hiyapi kaunteya purushasya vipaschitaha indriyani pramatini paranti prasabham manaha.
Translation. The senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. 61.
Tani sarvani samyamya yukta asita matparaha vashehi yasyendriyani tasya pragya pratishtita.
Translation. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Text 62.
Jayato vishayan pumsa sangaste shupajayate sangat sanjayate kama kamat krodho vijayate.
Translation. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment lust develops, and from lust anger arises. Text 63.
Krodat bhavati samoha samohat smriti vibramaha smriti bramshat purinasho purinashat pranashati.
Translation. From anger complete delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool.
Text 64. Raga dvesha vimuktaistu vishayan indriyaischaran atma vashaya vidyayatma prasadam adigachati.
Translation. But a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. Text 65.
Prasade sarvatukanam hanir asyopajayate prasanna cetaso hyashu buddhir paryavatishtite.
Translation. For one thus satisfied in Krishna consciousness, the threefold miseries of material existence exist no longer. In such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon well established.
Text 66. Nasti buddhir ayuktasya nacha yuktasya bhavana nacha bhavayatak shantir ashantasya kutar sukam.
Translation. One who is not connected with the Supreme in Krishna consciousness can have neither transcendental intelligence nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace?
Text 67. Indriyanam hi charatam yanmano nuvidhidhyate tarasya harati pragyam Vayurnavamivambasi.
Translation. As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. Text 68.
Tasmad yasya mahabhaho nigrihitani sarvashaha indriyan indriyartebhyas tasya prakya pratishtita.
Translation. Therefore, O mighty arm, one whose senses are restrained from their objects is certainly of steady intelligence.
Text 69. Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagarti samyami yasyam jagrati bhutani sanisha pashyato mune.
Translation. What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-control. And the time of awakening for all beings is night for the introspective sage.
And finally, text 70. Apur yamanam achala pratishtam
samudram apravishanti yadvat tadvat kamayam pravishanti sarve sa shantim apnoti nakama kami.
Translation: a person who is not disturbed by the incessant flow of desires that enter like rivers into the ocean, which is ever being filled but is always still, can alone achieve peace, and not the man who strives to satisfy such desires. Going back to text 60.
Translation: the senses are so strong and impetuous, O Arjuna, that they forcibly carry away the mind even of a man of discrimination who is endeavoring to control them. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada: there are many learned sages, philosophers, and transcendentalists who try to conquer the senses. But in spite of their endeavors, even the greatest of them sometimes fall victim to material sense enjoyment due to the agitated mind. Even Visvamrita, a great sage and perfect yogi, was misled by Menaka into sex enjoyment, although the yogi was endeavoring for sense control with severe types of penance and yoga practice. And of course, there are so many similar instances in the history of the world. Therefore, it is very difficult to control the mind and senses without being fully Krishna conscious. Without engaging the mind in Krishna, one cannot cease such material engagements. A practical example is given by Sri Yamunacharya, a great saint and devotee, who says,
Yadavari mama cheta Krishna padharavinde nava nava rasa dhama nityatunam tam asi tadavati badanari sangame smaryamane bhavati mukavikara sushtuni stivanamcha.
Since my mind has been engaged in the service of the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, and I have been enjoying an ever new transcendental humor, whenever I think of sex life with a woman, my face at once turns from it, and I spit at the thought. Krishna consciousness is such a transcendentally nice thing that automatically material enjoyment becomes distasteful. It is as if a hungry man had satisfied his hunger by a sufficient quantity of nutritious edibles. Maharaj Ambarish also conquered a great yogi, Duvarsa Muni, simply because his mind was engaged in Krishna consciousness. Save mana Krishna padarvandayor bachamasi ve gunta gunavaranin.
So, one should not put his faith in the senses or the sense objects just because the senses happen to be inclined or attracted to a particular sense object. Does not mean that it's healthy, because after all, there's the lower senses, or the lower nature, and the higher nature. The lower nature drags us down, degrades us into activities which are not beneficial, to thoughts which are not beneficial. And there are the higher nature, which is based on reason, based on intelligence, where one considers very carefully what will be the effect. Just like if you're, say, at some fair, some carnival, and someone comes up and offers you something to eat. Here, take this. You have to consider, now, if it looks like something that you're familiar with and you know the company is reputable, it's some kind of packaged, then you might accept, and you might. But if he gives you something just from some cup, there's no label, no ingredients, and you don't know this person, and he doesn't look very trustworthy, then you'll decline. Your higher nature, discriminating faculties, will say, how do I know what's in here? How do I know who this man is? This could be my business rivals may have sent him here to give me some poison. So one has to use discrimination before allowing his senses, even though the food may look very delicious. You may say, here, take this. I don't know this man. I don't know what he's put on there. I don't know what's in here. May not be. Therefore, the senses are not the final judge, nor is the mind, because the mind is not able to discriminate. The mind simply brings in data. It cannot assess the data. The intelligence has to consider, is this going to be good for the overall self? Therefore, Krishna's statement here that the senses are so strong, even a great personality may be swept away by the senses. And the example is given here of Vishvamitra Muni, perfect yogi meditating for thousands of years. But because he was susceptible, in other words, he was not engaged fully, although he was meditating, this is a shortcoming of the meditational system, that it may not give one sufficient strength to withstand the attacks of Maya. And generally, Prabhupada would give the example, although I don't, not here, but in other places. He says, although Vishvamitra Muni failed, Haridas Thakur did not fail, because he was chanting Hare Krishna. In other words, chanting or active devotional service will be more effective in controlling the senses. Haridas Thakur was not practicing the Ashtanga Yoga system like Vishvamitra Muni. And not only that, he wasn't even born in a high family. He was born in a Muslim family, Mohammedan family. But because he had taken the chanting of the holy names very seriously, therefore, even Maya personified could not persuade him to give up his standard. So, this means that the point of this verse is we must learn how to keep our mind and senses always engaged in devotional service. And Srila Prabhupada has been very kind. He's given us this movement. Actually, one cannot stop desiring. It's not possible to give up desires. The Buddhists and the impersonalists, they talk about becoming desireless. But even that's a desire. I have a desire to become desireless. So the whole thing is impossible from the very beginning. But they become fooled by this. The real principle is, rather than give up desires, is desire to spread Krishna consciousness. That should be one's desire. How can I spread the Krishna consciousness movement? Then he doesn't have to worry. His desires will not bring him into difficulty. They will not terrorize him. Because he's thinking, well, how can we distribute books? How can we have festivals? How can we bring others into Krishna consciousness? How can we serve the deity? How can we cook nice prasadam, make nice garlands, keep his temple clean? How can I understand his teachings? So many engagements. So many things to desire. How can I improve? How can I get free from material desires. That's a pure desire. How to give up the bad desires. So, this attempt to give up all desires, a dead stone. One time some elderly ladies came to see Srila Prabhupada and they sat down. They said, "Swamiji, we've been meditating now for 30 years. And Prabhupada said, "So what have you gained by your meditation?" They said, we've become silent. Prabhupada said, "Stones remain silent for thousands of years. It's not a very great accomplishment to be silent like a stone. What? That's not the goal of life, to be a stone. Have no desires." And of course, it wasn't true that they had no desires, but even theoretically, it's not desirable to be like a stone. Better to have beautiful desires, have wonderful, loving desires to help all living entities, to be pure, to want to glorify the Lord. And you can act on those desires and they won't cause bondage. They won't cause one to become implicated in material life. Questions?
Before I came to RVC, I was reading out of the book called Radha Damodar Vilas, and it's about two pure devotees, or Jayananda and Vishnujan Prabhu. And so my question was, it describes a pastime of Vishnujan. They're out on Harinam Sankirtan, and somebody brought him some sweet bread or something like that, and it describes him that he took the bread and he started eating it, and it said that it went to go to show that Vishnujan was still an individual and still had this was still in control, or still exercising his free will or his individuality. So my question was, if when these pure devotees, are they're above these discrimination laws? They no longer apply. It's like they no longer have to say, "Well, I don't know where this is cooked from, or this is that, or that is that." Are they above the law? So, I mean, they don't have to follow rules and regulations, as we read last night. They're no longer bound by that, and then because they're above it.
Sometimes, in the early days, devotees would go to festivals, and there would be lots of hippies there. I remember one in particular went to a festival, Laguna Beach, thousands of hippies, and like a peace and love. So there was a lot of chanting, devotees were distributing prasadam, and the non-devotees were also distributing some things, some drinks and different things. And some of the devotees ate them, and they had LSD in them. So they became intoxicated. That's happened several times. So, I don't know about the particular incident that you're referring to, but I know Vishnujan Swami. He taught me in the early days. He said, if someone offers you something, he said, to be kind to them, you accept it. He said, you accept it with one hand and then later on you give it away with the other hand. So he was very gentle and very kind. He didn't like to refuse anyone's offering. That's a nice quality. But it doesn't mean he took it. At least in my experience, he didn't take it. If it wasn't acceptable to be offered to Krishna, then he would just take it to satisfy the person that he had given something to Krishna, and then at another time he would give it away. Also, Prabhupada, he accepted so many things people offered him. It doesn't mean that he necessarily ate all of them, or that he even necessarily used everything. But the idea is a Vaishnav is the viceroy of Krishna. Vaishnav, Vaishroy. He's accepting on behalf of the Lord. So if one offers something to God, He offers it through the Vaishnava. Therefore, the Vaishnava, out of graciousness of the Master, he'll accept so many things on behalf of the Master. But, yes, a devotee uses discretion.
But isn't there danger if you use too much discretion thinking about if something is proper, and then you're not engaged in devotional service during this time when you're thinking of...
That's also devotional service, using one's intelligence and remembrance to understand whether this item is acceptable. Just like the Master, don't you think that the Master wants his cooks and his ministers to be very careful about what they serve him? Do you think, for example, if someone brings some vegetables to the cook, he wants his cook to discriminate very carefully. Are these good vegetables? Is this grains nice? He doesn't want him to just casually take everything in. Yeah, it's okay. It doesn't matter. He wants him to be very, very careful. So therefore, similarly, Krishna wants his servants to be very careful what is offered to him, especially in terms of foodstuffs. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati taraham bhakti paritam ashnami prayatatmana. He only accepts certain types of foods, and they should be very clean and very nicely prepared with love and devotion by devotees. Krishna, generally speaking, doesn't eat unless it's offered by devotees. Therefore, in the temples, generally the brahmanas are engaged in cooking only, because they are trained, and Krishna wants that his trusted, trained up devotees are offering. So that's a good system. That's the Vedic system. It's not discrimination against others, but it means that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has very high tastes and standards. Of course, there are some exceptions where someone who is not technically a brahmana was able to intimately serve the Lord, such as the Shabaras in Jagannath Puri. They were keeping pigs, swineherd. But because he was a pure devotee, even though the occupation was abominable, but because his heart was pure, therefore our Lord Jagannath accepted his service, intimate service.
Next text. Translation. One who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Purport. That the highest conception of yoga perfection is Krishna consciousness is clearly explained in this verse. And unless one is Krishna conscious, it is not at all possible to control the senses. As cited above, the great sage Durvasa Muni picked a quarrel with Maharaj Ambarish, and Durvasa Muni unnecessarily became angry out of pride and therefore could not check his senses. On the other hand, the king, although not as powerful a yogi as a sage, but a devotee of the Lord, silently tolerated all the sage's injustices and thereby emerged victorious. The king was able to control his senses because of the following qualifications, as mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam 9.4, verses 18-24.
We can all chant this together. Savai manak Krishna padad avindayor vachangsi vaikunta gunanu varnane karo harir mandira marjanadishu shutim chakara chuta satkatodaye mukunda lingalaya darshane drisho tad prithya gatras parashinga sangamam
Granam chatat parasarojasaurabe Srimat tulasya rasanam tadarpite Pado harekshatrapadanu sarpane Shiro harishikesha padabhivandane Kamam chatasyena tu kama kamyaya Yatotama shloka janashraya ratihi.
King Ambarish, this quote, King Ambarish fixes his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, engaged his words in describing the abode of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the temple of the Lord, his ears in hearing the pastimes of the Lord, his eyes in seeing the form of the Lord, his body in touching the body of the devotee, his nostrils in smelling the flavor of the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, his tongue in tasting the tulsi leaves offered to him, his legs in traveling to the holy place where his temple is situated, his head in offering obeisances unto the Lord, and his desires in fulfilling the desires of the Lord. And all these qualifications made him fit to become a Matpada devotee of the Lord. End of quote. The word Matpara is most significant in this connection. How one can become Matpara is described in the life of Maharaj Ambarish. Srila Baladeva Vijayabhusano, a great scholar and acharya, in the line of the Matpara remarks, Mad Bhakti Prabhavana Savandriya Vijana Purvika Svatmadrista Sulabeti Baba. The senses can be completely controlled only by the strength of devotional service to Krishna. End of quote. Also, the example of fire is sometimes given, quote, as a blazing fire burns everything within a room, Lord Vishnu, situated in the heart of the yogi, burns up all kinds of impurities. End of quote. The Yoga Sutra also prescribes meditation on Vishnu and not meditation on the void. The so-called yogis who meditate on something which is not on the Vishnu platform simply waste their time in a vain search after some phantasmagoria. We have to be Krishna conscious, devoted to the personality of Godhead. That is the aim of the real yoga.
This word matpara means in relationship with me or Krishna. So this relationship with Krishna means one is very, very confidential, very dear. And Ambarish Maharaj is such a devotee. One can be very dear to Krishna in any circumstance, whether he's a king or a shudra or child or woman or even in the form of a cow. In Vrindavan, there are so many cows, they are matpara. They are very advanced devotees in relationship with Krishna. Or the monkeys of Vrindavan. Because they are participating in his pastimes. Krita Krita Punja. It is described that the cowherd boys, friends of Krishna, they have performed heaps of pious activities which enable them to now become the friends of Krishna, cowherd boyfriends. It's not that they got that position just by accident. They're so purified. They have performed so much austerities and studies to get to that position. Now they can play with Krishna as equals. That means when Krishna gives devotional service, he's giving himself to the person. Because he's purchased by devotional service. It's stated in the Vedas that God gives material benefits quite easily. He gives those out. And he also gives liberation easily. But devotional service he does not give very easily, because then he's purchased. One who engages in devotional service has the Lord, because he's so attracted by devotional service. Like it's also said, that one should be
careful. A man should be careful about letting a woman serve him. Because if she serves him, then he'll feel attracted and indebted. We see this sometimes even amongst those in the renounced order. If they allow a woman to serve them, then they become implicated in some affection, some attachment. That's why to be able to serve Krishna means that Krishna is going to develop that loving relationship. Of course, Krishna always has loving relationship, never broken on his part. But still, there will be that close affection. And Krishna doesn't want cheaters to come. Just like you don't want in your home, you may be very generous and hospitable, and you may allow many people to stay in your home, to invite them to come and participate, to share with your wealth. But you don't want people who are going to cheat you. You bring them in and then at night they're stealing from you. No, that's too much. Or they commit some improper activity. So Krishna, he wants everyone to come, and he's inviting everyone, come, I'll take care of all your necessities. You can live with me eternally. But just don't be a cheater. Don't try to be duplicitous with me. Be straightforward. Question?
I was reading the Nectar of Devotion, and it states that you were talking about devotional service, and it says that Krishna is all attractive, and that he possesses, you know, all these six qualities or something, you know, the strongest, the most beautiful, the most renunciate, the most, you know, opulent. But it says that his internal potency is even stronger than Krishna himself. And I was just that kind of struck me, and I didn't quite understand it. And so, since you kind of brought this up, I figured it may apply.
Krishna is all attractive, but Krishna is attracted by Srimati Radharani. Madan Mohan means he's more attractive than Cupid. But Madan Mohan Mohini, she attracts the one who's more attractive than Cupid. So that means she's more attractive than him. Because he's the most attractive, but he's attracted to her. Therefore, the devotees in Vrindavan, they approach Radharani. The Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they approach Radha Krishna. First Radha. We go through the internal potency first. Because Radha, or the internal potency, the feminine aspect, she's more merciful. Just like you know, sometimes when you were a child and mother and father. So the father may be angry, but you go to the mother and you try to get her sympathy to be on your side. Mother, this happened, please, you know. So then she protects. She goes to the father and says, He did this, but, you know, let's not be too heavy on him. So one approaches the feminine. That doesn't mean the feminine is God, but she's very dear to God. She's the most beloved of the Lord. Therefore, if she requests on our behalf, then we're safe. So if we can win the favor of Radharani, like in Vrindavan, they say Radha, Radhe, Jai Radhe. They're more interested in getting the favor of Radharani. Because they know, if Radharani is pleased with me, then Krishna will be pleased automatically. Any other question?
Well, translation. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises.
Yes. This is a principle that is applicable in the material world. Why would we develop lust for something? Because it's our nature to have love. Love is a function of the soul. But when we don't remember Krishna, when we're not in touch with Krishna, then this tendency to love will become contaminated, and it will come out in the form of lust. We'll become attached. Just like, for example, Narottam Das Thakur says, Kama Krishna Kamarpani, that we don't have to give up desires, but I will turn my desires into an offering for Krishna. Instead of thinking, I will offer my senses. Just like a young man sees a beautiful flower and he thinks, oh, what a beautiful flower, let me offer it to my girlfriend. Why does he want to offer it to his girlfriend? Because he'll get sense gratification from that. But a devotee sees, oh, what a beautiful flower, let me offer it to Krishna. So that's the difference. One is offering in devotional service to the Lord, and the other is he's becoming attached to the flower because it will bring him sense gratification. He becomes attached to eating some food, pleasure for the tongue, pleasure for the eyes, pleasure for the ears, and then he becomes attached and he can't give them up. Sometimes we go to old people. Bhakti Richard has this experience also. People on their deathbed, just about to die. Now, it's clear that everything is going to be taken away from them in a few minutes. So the devotee says, won't you please now transfer your attachment to Krishna? We say, no. No, they're still attached. They will not give it up. They say, no, I still have hope in the material world. Their attachments are so strong. No, I'm still an American. This is my family. I have faith in the scientists. I have faith in the doctors. They leave their money to the cancer research organization. They have faith still. So this is amazing how they will not give up their attachments because they've developed a lust for them. And when one is under the influence of lust, he cannot see clearly. His mind doesn't... Well, as we hear, let's read the next verse, see what happens. Okay, just after this next one. 62.
Yes, the purport. One who is not Krishna...
Oh, no, let's read text 63, excuse me.
Text number 63. From anger, complete delusion arises, and from delusion, bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool.
Question?
So you're talking about desires and dovetailing them within Krishna consciousness. So if I have a desire to eat, can I be thinking, oh, I'm hungry, I want a banana, let me go offer one to the Lord, and that's the correct mood in which to culture? Or
that is better than, of course, thinking I'll just eat it without offering. But